Tony Koto, and welcome to another episode of South Pacific Muscle. Today we are joined by World Gym owner John Davies, based in Surfers Paradise, I believe, or just out of Surfers Paradise. Good to have you on board, John. How are you?
I'm good, bro. Yourself?
Yeah, really well, really well. It seems you've been a very, very busy man, so I thought I'd do a real brief intro, and then we'll just dig into a couple of things. Good to see you joining us from your car. You got your seatbelt on and everything?
Yeah, mate, I'm not driving. sorry, I'm late. I finished a bit of a leg workout with a few of the boys, and we ran over, you know.
Oh, that's gold, because I messaged you, and I said, oh, you're not stuck on a hack squat, are you? And I must have known.
It was a leg press.
Oh, gold. Hey, look, for those that don't know John, John has been involved in bodybuilding for many, many years now. Came up through the ranks. I believe first show was in New Zealand, of all places.
Yeah, Hamilton, mate. Down in Hamilton.
Ah, the Mighty Waikato. Came third. Well, and then went on to have a good amateur career in Australia with state titles and national titles before winning a pro card in 2000. And okay, look on your pro career, came third in the Grand Prix, and got beaten there by Chris Cormann and Troy Elves. So it's a pretty good company on the day on that day.
Yeah, mate. Like Chris was a long time friend of mine from, you know, I lived in Venice for a while, and you know, at the time Chris was the guy that everyone thought should be winning the Mr. Olympia. You know, he was just wasn't quite there focus wise, but to come behind him, you know, second or third or fourth or fifth behind him with some feet. So I was pretty happy that year.
Yeah. And then obviously 2003, you went on to fulfill a dream and get on stage at the Olympia.
Yeah, bro. Like, you know, back in Auckland, I used to work at a gym in Karaka Street and Newton, and I collected the Mr. Olympia tapes back then. You know, we used to get them, you know, probably in March, April, the year after the show. And I collected every tape from 1991. And yeah, I've always thought maybe I'd, you know, be crazy to get up on that stage. And in 2003, I was able to do it. So it was pretty surreal.
All right. It must have been an amazing experience. Hey, I found something. I'm just going to quickly share the screen because this question, and it might be a bit of a groundbreaking information here, John, but it says here in your contest history, you also competed in the 1980 Women's Bodybuilding Olympias. There's something we're missing.
Yeah, mate. No, that was a year I was a bit confused about myself.
Hey, and here's, for those that haven't seen John on stage, here's a photo from John's competitive career, and fuck it, great physique, man. Really great physique.
Thank you. Yeah, mate, it was, you know, as cool as it was to step out on stage, it was a bittersweet moment because when I got up on stage, you know, I fulfilled a lifelong dream, but I also realised that there was a lot more in play. And I just didn't quite have the genetics that some of the other guys had up on stage, you know. And I'm a bit of a realist. Yep. And I realised that was probably the first and last time I'd do it, you know.
Yeah, yeah. It must have been amazing, though, just to even be on that stage. Because I looked at the lineup from that year and you had Ronnie, you had Jay, you had Dexter, you had Dennis James, Gunter, you had Kevin Lavrone. Yep. What company to be amongst?
Oh, mate, I had a great... I put best seats in the house to watch the show, that's for sure.
Oh, amazing, amazing. And did you compete after the Olympia in 2003?
Yeah, I did a show back on the Gold Coast. Tony Doherty ran a show up on the Gold Coast in 2006. I think I came seventh or eighth. And, yep. You know, to be honest, I kind of shouldn't have done it. After the Olympia, you know, my wife and I had our son. Yep. And you know, anyone that has kids realises that your time suddenly gets split up, you know, and your focus goes a little bit. And I probably pushed to do a show. I was pushed into doing a show, really, that I didn't want to do. But, yeah, I did a 206. And, yeah, I came in all right, but I was nowhere near as good as I was at the Olympia a few years before.
Yeah. Yeah, and I see you talking about family. How's Joely and your son, your Tyrone and Bella now?
Yeah, the fun now is good, man. Like, Bella is 18 now, so she's nightclubbing and all that. So, and I'm actually sitting with her partner's next to me. So we just went and trained legs, you know.
Hey, is he a Kiwi boy?
Yeah.
Good stuff.
Hawke's Bay.
Yeah. So, no, I'm sitting in Hawke's Bay at the moment. Tell him I'm sitting at Waimarama Beach. So.
There he is.
Cold.
And Ty's, you know, growing up, Ty's good. My wife's, you know, everything's good. Everything's really good.
And I see you training with your boy the other day, and also that Bella's done she's actually won 3 bikini titles.
Yeah, mate. Like, you know, I any father or any parent loves to train with their spouse. You know, like it's one of those things, mate. When you get in there with your boy or your daughter, it's a real cool feeling, you know. And then she decided that she wanted to do a show. You know, she'd been. Obviously, she had a weird upbringing, you know, from the time she was seeing fitness and figure and bodybuilding competitors standing semi-naked in my bathroom posing, you know. So she thought it was all perfectly normal. Yeah. So, she did really, really well. And I think she's going to do another show this year now we're out of COVID.
Oh, cool. We'll keep an eye on that. And maybe even have a yarn with her before she does it.
Yeah.
Hey, amongst other things, you know, post bodybuilding career, you're a Musashi man and product development Musashi for 20 plus years or so. And then in the mid 2000s, you got the franchise for World Gym, and that's been going hell for leather. Do you want to give us a bit of a rundown on that?
Yeah, bro. So after I finished, while I was training, I was working for Musashi, and I worked for them for 20 odd years, which is pretty abnormal for people these days. But I loved the company, and you know, I got to part of my job was to work with athletes and do supplement programs. So I was working with all the league teams and did stuff with the All Blacks and the Crusaders, and I got free tickets to games. So I was in heaven, right?
Nice.
As a Kiwi, you know, everyone loves to go and watch rugby. So that was pretty cool. And then, you know, when that finished, I was like in my late 30s, and I was like, well, no one's going to give me a job now. So I got to find something to do. And I'd always been, you know, involved in the gym since I was 16. And I wanted to get a brand that was a serious brand, but I didn't want to isolate myself just into a bodybuilding brand, because, you know, everyone would expect John Davies gym to be a hardcore bodybuilding gym only. And you know, some of the best stories that I remember are stories of just normal people coming into the gym and changing their ways and getting, you know, a result. And in a way, everyone to me was building their body, you know, just at a different level. I decided to take it way, way further than anyone else or a lot of other people. So we went to America and we sat down with Joe Gold, and you know, which was an experience on its own. And we signed a deal to do World Gym in 16 years ago, and we started off with one club on the coast and one in Penrith, and then we've now, I think we're at 32 now around Australia.
Wow.
But when you're doing something you love, it's pretty easy, you know. A lot of work, but the work doesn't seem as bad when you're doing something you enjoy.
And I've seen you cutting concrete and doing floors and things like that. So you're very hands-on with the whole process.
Yeah, man. Like, you know, you do what you've got to do in any business. And, you know, especially when COVID hit, I renovated 2 gyms and we ripped everything apart. And, you know, flooring, walls, roofing, everything, equipment, we resprayed and fixed up. And, I don't know, man. The gym industry is a cool industry to be in, because you're getting people that are coming in for their 1 hour a day, you know, their 1 hour to themselves. The rest of the day, they might have a shitty day at work, or, you know, they don't want to go home to their partner or whatever. And it's their 1 hour to spend on themselves. And it's my job and my staff's job to make that hour good. But they come in looking forward to it. So you're always getting people coming in at the best time of their day. And that's the best thing about the gym industry.
Hey, I know what you and I have had this conversation. It was actually 8 years ago. I look back in my timeline, but when we caught up, you said that you like the idea of a world gym in Auckland. Are we any closer? Are we any closer?
Well, I'll tell you this, man. I've spent just before COVID, I was down in Tauranga with my mother. My mum and my sister live down there.
Yes.
And we went to Auckland as well to scope out some sites. And then COVID hit.
Yes.
But as soon as those borders open up, I'm coming back.
Oh, and good stuff.
Yeah, to be honest, I just trained out at World Gym Coomera. And, you know, it's Coomera's like the little Auckland of Australia.
Yep.
And it's an awesome feeling, mate. Like, I just think that the Kiwis would love, you know, the gyms that we set up. They're very serious-based gyms, and there's heaps of lifting equipment. But there's also stuff for normal people to go and train, and it's just a great community atmosphere.
Yeah, because you guys have got a real unique kind of feel. Like, you know, you go in, and I think when I went in there, I met a bunch of guys that are now pro athletes. But you also have people from all walks of life. You've got a lot of people into yoga, things like that. I know your partner, your wife is big on yoga. And it's a really quite an unusual mix, but it works really, really well. And I don't know how you've managed to create that kind of environment, but yeah, would love to see something like that over here.
Yeah, look, I think, you know, the most important thing is to listen to what other people say. You know, like I always knew what bodybuilders would want in the bodybuilding section, right? Because I was a bodybuilder. Yeah. But then when you ask people what they want in the functional training area, you've got to ask the functional trainer. And then same with the group areas and the yoga areas. So effectively what we do is we've created zones that everyone can feel comfortable in their own area. And that allows us to have, you know, an even spread of people. Like most of our gyms are 50-50 male, female. Yeah. And you know, you have, in the morning, there's like a massive heaps of mums and kids in creche. And we've got the barbell cafe where everyone kind of sits around and catches up after their workouts. And it's funny, man, because in all honesty, that's what I remember when I was training at Healthlands in Auckland. You know, they had a smoothie bar and they had an area where people used to sit. So it wasn't unusual to me to have that community style thing. But when I come over here, and all the big corporate clubs were getting rid of all of that because the accountants couldn't see where it made the money, you know. It was just about membership sales and PT sales. But, you know, I think having that community atmosphere is what keeps people engaged in your club.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, no, I mean, look, when I trained at Ashmore, you know, I was buzzing, and I think I trained every day on my holiday, kept coming back. Yeah, it was a good time. Hey, Mike, I've done my usual and chatted my head off. I know you've got something you want to ask, John.
Oh, that's what people come to expect. A lot of our listeners will be aspiring bodybuilders. Was there a point in time where you knew, you know, I can make a good go of this, I can be on the Olympia stage? Did you have a sort of a seminal moment where you knew it was going to be a possibility for you?
Yeah, you know, it's actually real funny. I tell the story a little bit to people that are close to me, but I met a guy called Tom Platts. You know, obviously you'd know Tom Platts, and yeah, most of the old school bodybuilders know Tom. Yeah, there you go. There's his legs, right?
Yeah.
So I remember Tom came to Auckland when I was about 17. I was working in a gym, and I didn't train legs much. You know, I did the typical upper body and arms kind of training, and you know, he'd be in there training at night because he was unacclimatized to the hours. You know, he was training at 2 a.m. And we just got talking, and he's a real metaphysical guy, you know, talks a lot. And he said, you know, you obviously don't train your legs very much because you've got a big upper body. And I was kind of, oh, okay. He goes, you should train legs with me one night. So I trained legs with him, and I couldn't walk for like 4 days. But in between, he said to me, you know, if you can train legs like that every week and you can train all your body parts like that week, that's what you need to do to be a champion. And I realized that I could do that. It was just dependent on whether I had the genetics to be a champion. And then probably about when I won the nationals in Australia, I realised that, you know, if I kept pushing myself hard, and I believe that at the time, like most serious bodybuilders do, that I was training as hard, if not harder, than anyone that I'd ever met. And if you keep doing that and you keep consistent with your food, like I was eating, sleeping, training, bodybuilding, then anyone really can make it to that, you know, national level or even international level. What happens, though, is once you get to that high-end international level like the Olympia, you start having genetics, freaks turning up that have, you know, trained for 5 years, like Phil Heath, and decided to switch from basketball to bodybuilding, and he's, you know, winning the Arnold Classic, you know.
Yeah.
Hey, look, on that, that kind of enlightened me a moment, really, because I remember when I came over to Ashmore, you were training legs, and I watched you train legs, and you were hitting it freaking hard. And I had a look on your Instagram, so those that want to follow John's Instagram, WG World Gym, John Davey. But I see that nothing's changed.
But I still, you know, I had skinny legs, right at the beginning. And then when Tom said you got skinny legs, and when you look at his legs at the time, I've never stopped training legs heavy, and I'll always train legs as heavy as I possibly can. And it's funny, you know, legs are one of those body parts that you dread doing, but as soon as you get blood in them, it just takes over your body and you just want to push harder and harder.
Sorry, as you say, once you've had a really serious leg workout, training back, training chest, training shoulder, training arms, nothing compares to that. So everything goes up a level. Now, you sort of talked about like knowing in 2003, there's another level to this game, and you decided not to kind of try and push through other means to kind of get there. So you seem like a pretty like you're still training hard, you're still healthy. So do you feel that kind of making that choice at that time kind of helped your sort of long-term health, and there were no adverse sort of flow-on effects from your competitive career?
Yeah, mate, like obviously there are other factors involved in our sport, you know, and I went to America, I came to Australia first of all chasing a dream to be a national level competitor, and, you know, I did well here, and then I went to America, and then you realise that, you know, there is this genetic pool with bodybuilding. You know, there is, you know, you get a guy like Flex Wheeler, who's someone who's got incredible genetics, right? And I was training with, Flex was training at Gold the same time I was with Paul Dillette, you know, these and other genetic freaks that were lifting light and, you know, they were doing other things, but genetically they had genetics that I could never match. No matter what I did, whether it was training-wise or chemically, I was never going to be one of those bodybuilders. And I saw so many guys chasing a dream and effectively putting their health at risk that I decided that my family was more important and my health was more important long term. And I mean, looking back now, 2003, there's three guys in that show that I did that aren't around anymore, which is a scary thought.
Yeah, that's a pretty important point. I mean, we're taught to commit 100%, leave no stone unturned, eat it, live it, dream it, believe it, you know, chase your dream. But there has to come a point in time where, you know, you're chasing something that you may not ever reach and you're really just kind of killing yourself. So, you know, I realised that quite a long time ago. I was never going to get close to where you guys are. So I decided not to kind of impact my health any further than I sort of had to. So good message for the young fellas out there. Yes, commit, go 100%, chase your dreams. But, you know, you have to be a realist about these things. Maybe getting an outside set of eyes.
Yeah, and mate, in all honesty, the most important lesson I learned out of bodybuilding was, you know, the lessons were life lessons, you know, training. You put in what you get out. You get out what you put in. You know, you commit to something 100% and you'll win at it. You know, I've taken that from my bodybuilding career and put it into my, you know, my career, as in my work and my relationships, and they're the most important lessons that I learned for bodybuilding. And I think if you look through the history of bodybuilders, you know, that have competed and won Mr. Olympia, each one of them, or even made a living out of the sport, each one of them were genetically blessed individuals. There was no one that, you know, when I stood on stage and I looked at the photos after the stage, I looked at myself and I felt like I was the odd one out. You know, I was that guy that, you know, could maybe get a, you know, a top 10 placing, but at what cost, you know? Mm. And whereas I look at, you know, and I don't want to turn anyone off it, because to me, I learned more about myself, and it's the most important lessons I learned from the sport. You know, I say it's the best sport to learn what you're truly capable of doing. But it might not be in bodybuilding. It might be something completely different.
That's a good thought. I like that. And a lot of successful bodybuilders tend to succeed in whatever the other ventures are, whether it's alongside their bodybuilding or post-bodybuilding career. So interesting. You also, just because, you know, you're running out of, you know, things to fill in your time with, decided you were going to be the IFBB promoter for Queensland, and just recently at the Sleeman Complex, which has got some fond memories for me from Strongman days, but you guys ran the Australian Nationals.
Mate, like, you know, for me, you know, actually promoting a show and watching those guys win, seeing the people backstage, brings back that same feeling and same memories that I had when I was doing it. So, you know, I'm winning every time I put on a show, man. I come away buzzing, just like I was when I was competing myself. And also, you know, over in Australia, up until a few years ago, the sport had kind of gone in a pretty weird direction. And, you know, the federations to me weren't, you know, the best federations. Oh, sorry, the way the federations were running weren't, you know, fantastic. Yep. So when Tony came in and asked me to help promote with him, and it was an easy thing to do. And, you know, I think we run good shows. You know, the show that we ran on the weekend, there was 250 competitors.
Wow. I think I lost you.
Pretty good. Oh, mate, I remember going to shows in my show in, you there?
Yeah, mate. Yep.
Yeah, I went to a show, and I think it was the ATS Centre one year, and it started at 8 in the morning and it finished at 2 a.m.
Yes.
You know, there was like massive competitors, you know, and it was New Zealanders are, you know, New Zealanders got a gene pool like no other country in the world with genetically gifted people. Yeah. And, you know, you that's what I loved about the sport. You see these melting pots of genetics, and they walk out on stage and you're like, man, that's so cool to see. So, yeah, I love promoting.
Yeah. Hey, what was, I mean, I've seen the photos, the standard looked pretty high from the limited photos I've seen, but what would you say the current state of Australian bodybuilding is looking like?
Yeah, it's pretty good. I mean, obviously coming out of COVID, we had a lot of the bodybuilders, you know, were down. So we had our bodybuilding side was down, but men's physique and bikini is the boom thing at the moment. We had one guy who's, you know, funny. He had only training for 2 or 3 years. He did men's physique. He won his pro card. The week Fabricio. Before he competed in Melbourne. Before he competed in Melbourne. So he's getting ready for the show. And he won the States. And Tony walked backstage and said he looked like a guest poser. And he spoke to him and he just said, oh, mate, stop eating Nando's for a week. You know, you accepted the pro card. So, it was good. The standard was good, really, in the men's physique. The bikini was really solid. And I think at the end of this year, you know, obviously half the gyms were shut, you know, for a long period of time. Yeah. So a lot of the bodybuilders were training in their garages and stuff. So I think the in season B shows will be really, really strong.
Cool. So do you guys have a dual national system over there? Season A and B?
Well, no. So basically, we normally have the Arnold in March, the Arnold Schwarzenegger Classic, which is in Melbourne. But obviously, with COVID, we couldn't run that. Yep. So we had the state qualifiers, and then we're going to run the nationals at the end of the year, and then obviously have a look at the state of travel restrictions in 2022 for the March shows again.
Yeah, cool. Yeah. Okay. Hey, man, John, we'll let you go because you're caught up in your car and driving. So I don't want you to go off the road or anything silly like that. Thank you very much for coming on. And look, we'll touch base with you later in the year and see how things are tracking. And hopefully we'll see you on this side of the ditch before then.
Yeah, hopefully, mate. Yeah, thanks for the time, mate. And I really appreciate being online with you guys.
Yeah, man. Thank you. Take care out there, mate.
Appreciate it.
Thanks, Sean.
See you, bud.
See you.
Okay, bye.